Welcome to Camping Out, a podcast about interesting people, stories, adventures, and their impact in the world, usually through the lens of outdoor adventure. I am Dan Camp, and tonight I am sharing a campfire conversation with the man who has set out to revolutionize how you find your next campsite, Mark Cutt. Mark is the creator of CampgroundViews.com, the only tool that lets you tour your campsite virtually before arriving. With over 3,000 first-person videos, actual 3D tours, 2,400 photographs, and thousands of reviews, Campground Views is the one-stop shop to make sure you never show up to a campground unprepared. The mission to create CampgroundViews.com is rooted in Mark's own love for camping. Him and his wife have been full-time RVers for 12 years now, even raising kids along the way, so he's no stranger to campsites, good and bad. It'd be a good time to pour yourself your preferred fireside beverage, grab yourself a chair, get cozy, and get ready to listen to the one, the only, Mark Cutt. Welcome to Camping Out. I am Dan Camp, and tonight I am sitting around the campfire with the creator of Campground Views, Mark Cutt. Mark has been a full-time RVer for over the last 12 years and has visited over 5,000 campgrounds, so he's no stranger to what makes a great campsite. That is why Mark and his team at Campground Views are revolutionizing how you find your next campsite by giving potential campers access to tools like virtual tours, first-person videos, and personal pictures and reviews from other campers. Finding a great place to set up your tent or park your camper has never been easier. This takes a lot of the guesswork out of planning your trip and can give you one less thing to worry about as you're putting together your adventure game plan. Mark, welcome to Camping Out.
I love it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so excited to have you. I wish people could see you got the coolest Zoom background going on right now. Where's that at? Is that Colorado or out somewhere out west?
That is actually Valley of Fire State Park north of Vegas. They got I don't know if you've ever been there. It's a beautiful campground. It's in those rocks, and you can go on a bunch of hiking trails up in the rocks, and there's some old movie sets and all that type of stuff. Really great place to go. Obviously not in the summertime, but spring and fall, great spot.
Yeah. Probably gets a little toasty. What is your preferred campfire beverage for our conversation tonight?
I am a drinker of water. That's all. Yes. I drink water. I don't drink anything else. So yeah, I'm a water person. I've never drank alcohol. I actually drank alcohol twice in my life. Once, because I raced really high level mountain biking as a kid. I started racing when I was 13. And so I rode with all the older guys, because when you're that young and you're that fast, you have to ride with the older guys. And right. They always give me shit because they're like, man, you're 18. You should be partying. You should be drinking. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. And so I said, all right, it's my 21st birthday. I'll drink whatever you guys give me one night only. So you better be there. And so we went out and had a wild time, and I drank a bunch. And it was funny because my metabolism was so high that I woke up the next morning not hungover. I was completely wired from all the sugar from the alcohol. I went the whole day long. So that was my alcohol experience. Obviously, that's not normal behavior. You know, we can do the standard disclaimer there, but that was my experience with alcohol. So I prefer water.
Hey, you can't go wrong with a good glass of water. I am kicking off Monday with a glass of Maker's Mark bourbon. I figured I was talking to Mark, might as well have some Maker's Mark, and it's one of my all-time favorites. So it matched up well for us.
That works.
There might be some secret though to not drinking, because you have you have a really good skin. You got a really good complexion. You're a good looking guy. So maybe,
flattery gets you far.
All right. Well, before I start kissing too much ass here, let's go ahead and get into the good stuff. So I like to start everything. I think there's really intricate connections that you can find talking to people who love the outdoors and crave outdoor spaces with how they got into it, you know, whether it was as a child or later in life. But I figure that's a really good place to start. Who are you? Where are you from? Where are you at? Where'd you grow up? And we'll go from there.
So I was originally born in Aberdeen, South Dakota, but my family moved to Southern California when I was 3. So I basically grew up in Southern California, specifically a city called Simi Valley, California, which is in Ventura County, north of Los Angeles. Okay. Bedroom community, mostly police and firefighters from LA County live in there. My dad worked in insurance. My mom owned a local balloon and flower shop and went to the high school and all that stuff there. The great thing about Simi Valley, though, and it's important to the story, is it's a valley. It's surrounded by mountains and really beautiful mountains. mountains. If you've ever been to that region of the world, Ventura County is a very beautiful area. And those mountains always, I can remember as being a young kid, about 4 or 5, just looking at those mountains, and they would draw you, like, I want to go into them. And mountain biking just started to become a thing right when I turned 12, 13, and I saved and got my first mountain bike, and we started riding, and I rapidly took it up, became really quick, really, really fast. And so my adventures in the outdoors started on the bike. And so a lot of my journeys have always kind of centered around the bike and the bike ride. In fact, in summer of 2000, I told some buddies, the same guys I mentioned that, you know, I had to go drinking on that 21st birthday with, just in passing, said, "Hey, I'm going to ride my bike across the country." And they're like, "Yeah, right, Mark." And so I rode my bike across the country in summer 2000. I just put a backpack on and rode across the country. I went through a windshield in Owensboro, Kentucky, got hit by a car, took 10 days to heal, and then finished the journey into Washington, D.C. So that was like my my coming of age story, right? I beat the odds and made it to D.C.
Not before going through somebody's windshield. Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. So you go on this big adventure, you start to connect with outdoor spaces. And did you like camp along the way as you're making your way from coast to coast?
So I camped for a little bit, but then ended up staying in hotels the whole way. Our journey in camping was later on. So my wife and I, we got married. This was in 2008. And everybody's been there. The big question is, what are we going to do next? How is our life going to look? Where are we going to go? And, you know, how are we going to live? And we easily said we would love to travel. And said, okay, well, we'd love to travel. How can we make that happen? And that's where the idea came. Originally, my idea, I said, hey, let's buy an RV and hit the road. My wife said, no, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard of. And so obviously, happy wife, happy life. Okay, that's out. And a few months later, she comes back to me. And she's like, hey, that idea, I like it. Let's. And so then about a year of planning, and then in June 2009, we sold everything we owned, moved into a fifth wheel, and hit the road. And that began our camping journey, was in that RV. Originally, it was going to be a year and a half traveling. And then it morphed into 12 years living our lives as digital nomads traveling this country and getting to experience and see. The thing about camping is it, I believe, camping is the last best way for us to reconnect with ourselves, with nature, and with our family and friends. And it's, if you ever go camping, if you're listening and you know it, if you're like, yep, yeah, that's right. And if you haven't gone camping, trust me, if you go camping and truly go camping, you will reconnect with all those things.
Yes. Amazing. And so I think a lot of people have had this grandiose idea of selling everything and doing what you guys did, but they get stuck at the selling everything spot. And, you know, people always say, you know, you clean things out for a garage sale. It's one of the most freeing moments once you finally get rid of some of the stuff that you thought, you know, mattered a lot. And all of a sudden you got more room, you got more space, and you got less things. Did you have that experience where you started to, you know, kick this plan into action and you're like, oh my gosh, what are we doing? Or was it more, you know, zen, I guess, going towards it?
So maybe that might become a theme as we're talking about the way I operate. Once I decide I'm doing something, I'm doing it. Like, sure. But the decision to get there, like, I don't just haphazardly say I'm going to do it. Like, I make sure that it's something I actually want to do. And so in this case, once we made the decision we were going to do it, my entire outlook in actions and decisions were around doing it. And so that was my mother-in-law. She was shocked. We did our first garage sale outside of our apartment, and she comes and we just got like all this stuff out on tables. Yeah. And it's not a normal garage sale. It's, you know, we're younger kids at the time. We just got a lot of stuff, right? A lot of little stuff. Yeah. And, I sold everything in that day. I sold everything on the tables. And she's like, I've never seen somebody sell everything at a garage sale as quickly as you did. And here's my theory. I'm not storing this. So it's either going to you or it's going in the trash. So if somebody picks it up and like, how much? I say $5. They put it down. I say $2. They leave it there. I say $1 and they say, all right. And so that's how I sold everything on the table, because I didn't care about price. I just literally wanted to get rid of it. So I sold everything out of our thing in that one sale, and that was it.
Was that freeing for you, or was it hard?
You're hitting it on the head. The most freeing thing you can ever do is to eliminate possessions that hold you back. And there is a difference there. And one, it's actually, so we're in our journey now, we're actually going through a transition where we are going into and buying a house now. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that the people that have bought houses before, and if you've never been a full-time RVer or lived a nomadic lifestyle, you have no idea how much stuff goes into houses. And if you haven't, like we, our theory on everything that we own is if we haven't touched it for a year, we don't need it. And so we, like literally we, all of our worldly possessions would fit in a small room right now. And I'm looking at this house and we're literally asking questions like, if we put a bed in there, will we actually use it? Or is it just there for guests who come once a year, right? You know, and so it really changes your perspective on stuff and the stuff you acquire and the cost of acquisition. So the answer is yes. When you do sell everything you own, it is incredibly liberating. And going out on a journey like what we have been on for, you know, 12 years is epic. And if you can do it, do it. Trust me, it's going to be fun. It's going to be stressful. It's going to be scary. It's going to be hard, but it's also going to be something that you will never regret doing. Even if you fail at it and have to go do something else, you will never regret it.
Yes. Take the jump, take the leap, do the cannonball. I love it. I'm really, really excited to talk about campground views, but this, your journey and your time on the road, I'm definitely super curious on. So I hope you don't mind if I ask a couple more questions quick.
No, go for it.
I was fortunate enough to take a three-month road trip with myself and my now girlfriend and our friend Samantha in 2018. And we had like a really rough idea of where we were going to go and what we're going to see. And we're like, okay, we have 3 months to do it. We have X amount of dollars. Like we got a Jeep and a pop-up camper and some bikes on top of that and a couple kayaks. Like, let's go see how much fun we can have. And you know, you definitely learn a lot from your companions as you're traveling. And, you know, there's things that you have to go up against and, in between all the Instagrammable, you know, views and moments, there's the moments where, you know, something breaks on the trailer or, someone's brushing their teeth and it's just annoying you for whatever reason that morning. So I was going to ask if you could share some of like your best moments, highs and lows of traveling, especially with a significant other in such a cramped fashion for as long as you have.
That is a really good question. Yeah. And it's true. I mentioned I race mountain bikes, and when I started dating my wife, she'd never ridden a mountain bike before in her life. And I'm riding at a really high level, so how are we going to go for rides together? I bought her a bike, took her to Mammoth. She went down the hill, almost crashed into a tree. It was a really great dismount, but I was like, she's going to die if she keeps trying to ride with me.
Right.
We ended up buying a tandem mountain bike, 8 inches of travel, full-on tandem mountain bike. So I could be in the front like gung-ho, and she's just in the back chilling. I'm a good rider. We're never going to, and we ended up riding that thing tens of thousands of miles. And the reason I share that story is there's a saying in the tandem community, wherever your relationship is going, a tandem will get you there faster. And it's the same thing as what you're alluding to in this journey. Wherever your relationship is going, you lock yourselves in an RV for a year, your relationship's going to get there a lot faster. And so we already had a good, solid relationship going in, a really good. You need good communication skills, the ability to get along, but also to fight effectively, because you know you will argue, you will fight, and how those end is where your relationship's going, right? Does it end with you storming out and leaving, or do you guys work it out and move ahead? So my tips for you, if you're going to hit the road, is to, number one, before you do it, recognize that it will be a thing. You will get grouchy in the morning about the toothbrush. You will have bad times. And so one of the pieces of advice we got when we started this journey was an older gentleman who had known people who had full time, and his piece of advice was buy the biggest thing you can afford, because there will be rainy days, there will be snowy days. And so at that time we were looking at like the Airstreams, like they're really cool looking. The problem is they're really small. If you're going to live in it, it's a tight space. And so our first RV was a fifth wheel that was 38 feet long. So it was big. There's plenty of room inside. It had slide outs. And the rig we most recently had was 44 feet long. It was 500 square feet inside. I would never say it was a camper. It was an apartment on wheels, but that was how we traveled. And so that space gives you the ability to go do stuff. The other thing that happens when you're traveling, and most people, like you brought your bikes and your kayaks along with the idea that you're going to go do this stuff. But when you're at home, like, you know where the trails are around your house. You know where to go kayak when you're around your house, and you've got like a routine around that. When you're traveling, you kind of lose those routines, and it becomes hard for you to take the time for yourself to go do what you need to do. So if you're going to travel, be conscious of that and actually give yourself time to go, because everybody needs time to decompress alone. Take that time to go decompress alone. That'll help you have that time to yourself that you need to refresh and rejuvenate your mind and your body.
Great answer. Great answer. I love that. And as you guys have traveled, do you ever ditch the apartment on wheels and go in and do a little bit more rustic style of camping?
Yeah. So when we started, when we sold everything that we owned, there was actually a few things we didn't sell. And one of them was my grandfather's 1971 Chevy C20. It was all beat up, but we put it in storage because it was given to me when my grandfather passed away. Mm-hmm. As we realized that we were not going to stop full-time RVing, it was about a year. It was actually around that year mark. We realized, hey, we're going to keep doing this. We ended up, my stepdad built hot rods. We ended up paying him to restore the truck to this beautiful, modern, retro rod pickup truck. And for six years, we had that truck with us. And so we would take that, we'd go tank camping, like we did the Blue Ridge Parkway, the entire thing, camping in all the campgrounds, and we drove that truck. And so we've done that. We've camped in Yellowstone in that. Always truck camping, though, not really tent camping, but, you know, it's you're sleeping in the bed of a truck. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm a big fan of putting the seats down the back of my Jeep Cherokee. And that's where, if I don't have to throw up a tent, I honestly don't do it. So I hear you there.
Yeah.
Well, man, this is a great segue into your latest endeavor here with Campground Views, which is, I'll let you explain it because obviously you'll be the best at it, but it's an amazing site. And we talked a little bit off camera about this, that I couldn't believe that something like this hadn't happened, that, you know, so many people will show up to a campsite without ever seeing it. And, you know, sometimes that's a magical experience, but I would say for myself, I've been disappointed a lot showing up to a campsite with limited information. I'm mostly surprised when I show up to the ones where I don't read a whole lot, and then I don't have expectations. But if I had been able to see some of these spaces before I went to them, it might have changed my route a couple of times, and it probably would have saved me a lot of headaches. So tell us about what Campground Views is and what you guys are up to and how you got the idea itself.
So the idea, I'll start at the idea. So the entire idea behind campgroundviews.com is what you noted. It's about seeing the campgrounds. And, you know, what do you think back when I mentioned that we started full-timing in 2009, like I'm starting to date myself, but in 2009, literally I was traveling with a USB card that plugged into my computer, and provided me a 3G signal. Our phones, there was no such thing as an iPhone or a smartphone. It was literally the Nokia slide out with the keyboard on it that you could text on. Like it was a fast text thing, right? So that was our technology. So you spent a lot of time on kind of cruddy websites trying to figure out where you're going to camp, and you were reading reviews, and you would show up at this park and everybody said this is the best one, and the one next door was nicer, cheaper. It was a bad experience. And so I kept saying, because even at that time they had cell phones and video cameras, or the cell phones had video cameras and photo cameras on them. So if everybody's got a camera in their pocket, why doesn't a website just have photos and video? Why isn't anybody doing this? Oh, well, maybe we should do it. This is the classic entrepreneur tale. It's obvious to me and it seems super easy. Let's go ahead and do it. We'll make a whole bunch of money. And so we launched it. We got it going, but didn't make a whole bunch of money and started building this up. Mm-hmm. But what we did receive, and now I'm going back in time now. We're talking 7-8 years ago that we actually started the thing. So it's been a long time. But people liked it. The campers liked it. And the reality was we were really trying to help campers. This wasn't like, hey, we'll become billionaires. It's like, no, let's help people find campsites. And so we started doing that. Now, fast forward about 4 years ago now, GoPro came out with a 360 camera as a consumer grade 360 camera. Actually, before that, there was a camera called the Fly. It was a 180 camera. So it was kind of a half 360 on top. And we actually started shooting with that because Google Street View is the obvious solution for campgrounds. If I can go through the campgrounds, I can see what it looks like. But Google won't drive through the campgrounds for whatever reasons they have. They don't do it. And nobody else is doing it. Why aren't they doing that, as you allude to, right? And so we started doing it. And when we started shooting these 360s, we just posted them up on YouTube, and they weren't viral videos. You know, you're not getting millions of views. You're getting a few hundred to a few thousand views, but it's all from people who are going to that campground. And the feedback we got is, this is amazing. Thank you. This is just what I wanted. But in the big but we got from everybody is, I don't know what site number that is. And then I have to go try to figure out if it's available. And I don't know. And we kept getting that feedback. And so I had the idea. I'm like, well, wait a second. Technology is maybe there where we can augment that experience and overlay on that 360 the information they're seeking. So the site number, is it available, and allow them to book. Mm-hmm. And it took us about 3 years, and I've built a team now that we have a tech lead, Steven, Trisha and Javier, our team. We've built this and we've created this technology and taken the business to a whole nother level. So this last summer, we, during COVID, during all the forest fires in Colorado and everywhere else, we had a team go out and capture every single recreation.gov property in Arizona, Utah, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, and Nevada. Because, you know, if you're going to do anything, you got to do it. And I'll tell you, the next question that may come up is, well, who's your investors? Who's your backers? Nobody. We've done this ourselves. We've bootstrapped everything. Every dime we make goes back into the business. We've been building this thing because we believe that this will fundamentally change and improve the way people find campsites.
Absolutely. It's so cool to hear how the idea started and then the technology kept developing. And you're like, oh man, an affordable 360 camera, we can do this. And it really is a community-driven process, it seems. So you post these things out for people to check out. You're getting the feedback back. All of a sudden, you're able to put the site information on those virtual tours. I'm going to encourage everybody to check this out because it is amazing and how they do it. But I want to know, like, how you got this team. How do you do it? So you have everybody go with a camera, and then they're marking it as they go. I don't know. Explain it to me like I'm a toddler, because it sounds pretty amazing.
So if you're like a toddler, I'll break it out. So somebody films it, and then we pull it into our system, and then we lay out the hotspots in that video. And then we link up to the underlying database, which would be recreation.gov, mm-hmm. those hotspots. And we know that that's site two, we link up site two. And that's how we build these tours out. That's in a really basic nutshell. The actual technological problem, I didn't realize what we were diving into when we did this. The actual technological problem we are solving has never been solved before. It sounds crazy, but we've actually created an entirely new technology within this. We didn't create 360. That's already there. But what we created is the process of laying out an augmented experience within that 360 video. It's called motion tracking is the technology used if you're doing regular video. But anybody who's really geeky will be like, yeah, are you doing motion tracking? And this will blow their mind. We're not. We're not doing motion tracking. We've actually developed something that's completely different. Really? And the math problem Steven solved in order to make this work is unbelievable. In fact, as of 3 months ago, he said it was not going to happen unless we had $150,000 and hire all these programmers. And then, like any genius tech guy, he slept on it a little bit, programmed it out, and all of a sudden he said, yeah, I got it. It was easy, right? You know, it's one of those where if you've ever worked with that type of personality, oh man, it's not going to work. And then all of a sudden, nah, I figured it out. It's all good. And you're like, yeah, you got it. In fact, it was almost 3 weeks ago now that we, as a team, we got to see, he said to us, hey, I've got it live. You guys can test it out. And so as a team, we had the first experience, and it was surreal. Because, some of your listeners, you know, when you reach a dream, when you've been thinking about this and you want it, and all of a sudden it's there, mm-hmm. and you've worked so hard for it. It was unbelievable. And what was really cool about it is it was his first beta version test site. It was already 70% there as a viable product. And in that 3 week period, the incremental adjustments to where we just did an email blast today to our followers, 30,000 followers, every single feedback we got was, this is awesome. It wasn't, this is buggy, this isn't working. It was, this is awesome. That's in 3 weeks from the time we launched the thing. So we're moving it forward.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I work closely, a very small team in my real job, I say with air quotes, my 9 to 5. But it's software related, and I do work with developers, and I can totally hear, you know, that's not going to work. We can't do that. The next day it's up, it's fixed. And I'm like, how do we span that gap? So that's a great person to have on your team. That's amazing. Now, as you guys continue to push this product out, and you guys are doing a great job with, you know, the email blasts and upping the awareness and, you know, doing things like this, how do you see campgroundviews.com changing the way that people actually go out to camp?
So if you've ever camped, you know that when you're driving to that campground, you stop either on the way there or on the way back, you'll stop at two or three other campgrounds in the area and drive through them real fast. Just get an idea of that, if that's where you want to camp next time. We allow you to do that virtually now. So you'll be able to go and tour through the campground. So that's how it's going to fundamentally change the way you no longer have to spend. The average camper, this is a real data point here. So the average camper spends 2 months visiting 58 different websites over 76 different sessions planning their camping trip. And all that confirms what, if anybody's camp knows, is you spend a lot of time trying to figure out if this is the right place, right? You keep going all these different websites and compare all the data. And you don't have to do that anymore. You just can go click on a virtual tour, go through that campground and say, oh yeah, this works. It's either got trees, you know, whatever you're looking for. And that's where the fundamental difference that we've created here is. So if you think of Expedia or hotels.com, we all fit in the same hotel room. And so your only real decision factors is location, quality, and price. But if you go camping, everybody has different camping gear, size of groups, and needs. And the problem is that doesn't fit in a grid. You need to see it in order to pick which is going to be right for you. We enable that. And so by going at the scale and speed that we're doing this, by I'm going to hedge this. We actually may be a little earlier, but let's say by July, you will be able to do this for those 400 parks in the states I mentioned. Yeah. By the end of this season, we will have every single recreation.gov family campground in this experience. And then after that, we target state parks. And then after that, we target private parks. And with our roadmap, within 2 years, we have hopefully at least 10,000 campgrounds available for you to virtually tour in 360. And what's unique about everything I said there, because if you have like a business mindset at all, a lot of questions came to mind, like, wait, why are they going to allow you to do this? How are you getting paid? And, you know, how are they making money off this? Mm-hmm. The camping industry is very interesting, and on the campground reservation software side, it's very competitive. There's actually if you never even thought about it, there are all these really large companies that provide the reservation software that powers campgrounds, and there's a whole bunch of them. It's a very fragmented market. So we could start our own reservation engine, but then we'd be competing with everybody else. So what we did is we designed this as a plugin that sits on top. We'll work with any reservation engine. So that way they can plug it in really easily. So that's one. Number two, the margins in campgrounds are really low. So you think about a campground, it's $20 to $50 a night, right? In that range, right? Mm-hmm. Unlike a hotel where you get 10 or 15%, it doesn't hurt. If you go 10 or 15%, it can hurt these owners. They're not going to be willing to pay for it. So our revenue model, the way we make money and pay for this, is the people who will pay for it are the people getting the most value out of it. And that's the camper. So we're selling it as a membership, and people can join on a weekly, a monthly, an annual, or a lifetime basis, pay whatever, you know, that price is. They fund it. So the value in the other thing it does is it aligns our goals with the people we're trying to help. So if we're trying to help the campers, they're paying for it. You know, we're not serving two masters where we're getting paid by a reservation engine or paid by a campground. We're getting paid by the campers. Right. And that means we want to deliver for the campers.
Yeah. The people paying for the software, the people saying, hey, we need this. And it makes sense to serve that person. That's perfect. Hey, campers, I want to catch you right here in the middle of this episode to tell you about an amazing service for all you outdoorsy people looking for your next great campsite, campgroundviews.com. Campgroundviews.com is the one-stop shop for planning your next camping trip. Have you ever showed up to a campsite and been a little bit disappointed about maybe the location or just the overall look of the site? I know I have. CampgroundViews.com takes the guesswork out of picking your tent or RV site and allows you to actually virtually tour campgrounds before ever stepping foot at a site. To check out more, go to CampgroundViews.com and consider becoming a member. Personally, I've had, especially when we were traveling, I had some times where I'm a little bit of a control freak as it comes to planning trips, because it's like the old adage, if you want it done right, do it yourself. And so I think to myself, Dan, you're the man. You can get this figured out. No problem. Smooth, smooth, smooth. You got it taken care of. And I got some feedback from my adventure buddies that I was being a little overbearing in the controlling in the planning aspect of things. So we decided to divvy it up a little bit. And man, I was very anxious about this. And we got to a point where I was like trying to like sneak over in the car when I wasn't driving to like look and see, okay, we're going here. Have they looked at these campsites yet? So I was like still freaking out. And we had one bad night where we were like outside of Louisiana and Houston, between Louisiana and like Houston, Texas. So like I think we went to the Shreveport Fair that night, and then, you know, pitch dark, it's raining, we're trying to find a campground. Our data's bad. We end up in this spot where there's not even a campground that's open, and the roads are terrible. We're pulling this pop-up trailer behind us, and it's late. I'm kind of, I got a little bit of an attitude because I didn't plan this night to camp. I'm like going out and like testing puddles to make sure we have enough clearance in the car. I mean, long story short, the bad experience, we ended up sleeping. It was probably like 1 a.m. by the time we stopped. Rain. We were in this equestrian campground in the middle of who knows where. Woke up the next morning, had a flat tire. I mean, just like everything that you could have go wrong went wrong. And I think to myself, man, if we knew about campgroundviews.com, this could have saved us a lot of headaches. I mean, do you see this solving a lot of those kind of issues for people who are trying to find just a nice, fun place to stay?
Yeah, it solves a lot of problems for campers. There's actually an additional benefit to this. Because of all the planning you know you do for your camping, think about all the people who say, nah, I'm just going to stay in a hotel.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to go through all that stuff. So there is a large population of people who do not go camping because they're not going to take the time to research it, and because they don't take them, you know, they miss out all the benefits of it. So we see that as being the add-on. And let me share a little data point, because this kind of adds to that. So when you think of the recreation.gov, when I say recreation.gov, that's national parks, national forests, it's federal campgrounds, so all those federal campgrounds. There's about 1,200 to 1,500 family campgrounds, which would be your traditional style campground, in that network. On an average year, those campsites generally go between 30 and 40% occupied, meaning that 60 to 70% of the time, there's nobody in those campsites, except for the four or five very popular ones in Rocky Mountain National Park, in Yellowstone. The ones everybody knows of are packed. But what's crazy is if you go within a 100-mile radius of that spot, there are usually several hundred other campgrounds equaling several thousand campsites available. So people skip out on camping because they don't have the good data. That's where, so we help it's the obvious that we help the people that are going to go camping, plan their trips and do them better. But the bigger benefit I see is getting more people outdoors in an enjoyable way, right? And that's a key way, because what you do when you're able to see visually what you're getting into is you lower the fear barrier, because now you know where you're going. You know what it looks like. And you can even mentally plan for how you're going to back in when you get there, right? Because you can see what the angle is from the road. The second thing is you're able to bring your traveling partners along, because now you can link and say, hey, we're going to say Camp 10, go check it out, right? And so now they can see it. So it lowers their inhibition. So now your worries, instead of, oh God, where are we sleeping tonight? What's it going to look like? It's going to be nice. Your worries are, hey, how do we get there? Where are the roads? Where to get food? You know what? It removes those barriers that some people may have to actually going camping.
Which is so amazing. I think out of all the things you guys are doing, that's the one that gets me the most excited. We're just seeing an uptick in people getting outdoors. And I think a lot of it was, you know, people are trapped inside a lot and people are realizing the benefits of getting out into natural spaces. And there's a lot of things that go into that, you know, like how do we continue to educate people to recreate responsibly? And how do we encourage people to go out and explore maybe outside of their neighborhood? And that's why I'm really inspired by what you guys are doing because of that, because like my mother is not a camper. Our last name's Camp, but my mom is not a camper. And so she wants to know things like, are the bathrooms there? How far is the bathroom from where my campground is? Is it flat? Am I going to be comfortable? You know, those are things that you can all have answered just by your guys' service before even getting there. And your point of getting these people who are nervous about it outside, it is such a huge thing. I mean, it's amazing for people to feel that safe, calm, you know, clear-headed thought process when they're maybe doing something that's outside of their comfort zone.
Absolutely. You know, the outdoors, you see it in movies when they make fun of camping, like, hey, they'll get eaten by bears or whatever, or crazy mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like, you know, my parents, honestly, when we sold everything, we bought that fifth wheel, they thought we were going to die. Like they thought we were going to get kidnapped and killed. But what's hilarious is they all own RVs now. They've all bought RVs. They're all traveling right now in RVs because they saw how amazing this experience is. And, you know, as you noted, through the craziness of the last year, and this is an inherent benefit. It's going to be weird. It's an inherent benefit of the experience in which it forced people to finally stop for a second and think about what it is they're doing. And then ask the obvious question is, why am I doing this? And I know it because I've spoken to people, and you're starting to see the transition happen now where people are saying, you know what, I'm tired of doing whatever it was I'm doing. I'm going to change my life and do something different because that's how I want to live. And if there's a benefit of all this chaos, it's that. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of benefits, but if we're going to say there's a benefit, there's that. And so as a result, you're actually seeing that the camping and RVing industry has absolutely exploded. I mean, absolutely. We just did a survey of 2,000 park owners. Their advance bookings are up something like 50% over a normal year. So not over last year, over a normal year. Yeah. This will be the year of camping. In fact, I'm calling it 2021 is the year of camping. Everybody is going camping and RVing. In addition to that, there's all these people who are now working from home or schooling virtually who mm-hmm. are now enabled to do what my wife and I have done for the last 12 years. I was a virtual nomad before it was a thing, right. Just because, you know, but it is a thing now because connectivity is so good. You can go and work from – why do you need to be in an office if you have high-speed internet? Everything's on the computers. Our world will – so our goal is to help camping, but if we look at the world as a whole, it has been fundamentally changed by this whole last year, and it will be fundamentally changed. The trick is, and for all your listeners to recognize that in this moment, either somebody can change your world for you, or you can choose to change your world for you. That's the choice we're at right now. You either let somebody make your decisions for you or you decide for yourselves. And, you know, you probably tell them a little bit of, I'm like you, Dan, I make decisions, you know, what we're going to do this stuff. Yeah. I encourage you to decide, here's how I want to live the rest of my life, and then take actionable steps to move yourself towards that goal.
That is fantastic advice. Fantastic advice. Hope everybody's soaking that in like a sponge right there. That's good wisdom. All right. I want to shift to the future for you guys. Obviously, you know, you guys started this project years ago, and now we're catching some steam. You've got the technology is there. People are getting hyped up about this. Like you said, 2021, the year of camping. There's some momentum here. The ball is rolling downhill a little bit. So as you guys continue to progress and the product continues to grow and your loyal fan base continues to grow and you continue to make your impact out there in the world. What is your guys' moonshot? What do you want to do? Money's not an issue. You have all the resources in the world. Where do you see campgroundviews.com going in the future?
That's a really good question. So when you think it, I could be like Elon Musk and say, I want to go to Mars, right?
Right.
But in the end, we all die. Right?
Yep.
In the end, we all die. You can't take the money with you. The only thing you have the power to do is to impact other people's lives while they're here. Make them better, make them simpler, make it easier, or help them on their journey. And so our goal, we've had this for a long time. Our goal is to make camping amazing. And it goes back to what I originally said, which is when people connect with the outdoors, they're able to rediscover themselves, rediscover nature, and rediscover their family and friends. If everything that we do is focused on that, as long as we stay focused on that, all I'll say is that we will continue to push the envelope of technology to help people do that. So I don't know what it's going to be, and I wouldn't be naive enough to even guess as to what it's going to be. Right. So all I can say is this is our goal, is to make camping amazing, and we will continue to work towards that for as long as we're able to.
Yes, yes, that is amazing. What a goal. I think that's a fantastic, we'll call it a Mars shot here since you brought up Elon Musk. Before we move into like the final five questions here, is there anything else that you want to touch on? I did want to ask, you know, for there's a lot of people listening, how do they get involved with campgrandviews.com, whether they want to sign up and, you know, use the product, or maybe there's somebody who's connected in the technology realm. They're curious about how to get linked up with you guys. What's the best way for someone to get involved with you?
So we're easy to reach. Go to campgroundviews.com and you'll see a bunch of options. You can join for free. It just gets you on our email list so that we can spam you. No, we don't spam, but it gets you on an email list. There's also some options. We're pre-selling those memberships at like huge discounts right now. So you can sign up for that if you want to. That money, you know, we're selling it at a discount because we're using the money to launch the service. So, you know, if you want to support us, we love it that way. Social media, we're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We actually have a really big following on Instagram, about 16,000. People follow us on there. So we post on Instagram quite a bit. I'm personally on LinkedIn, but Facebook, campgroundviews.com, and not to mention it, YouTube. We have a giant YouTube channel. We got like, I don't know, we're at over 3,000 videos, and it's all videos of campgrounds and RV parks. So those would be the spots to connect with us.
Awesome. And you guys are doing some sort of affiliate program as well. So if there's people who are well connected in the outdoor world, they can help sell the product with you.
Yeah. And it's funny. So my tech guy, Steven, you know, I said genius already, right? We get into debates all the time on this one. Cause I say to him, you know, what's cool about this is I'm not selling anything. He's like, yeah, you are. You're selling something. I'm like, no, we're going to make people's lives better. He's like, yeah, but you're selling them on that. I'm like, so I would encourage you to partner with us to help make camping better. And through that, yeah, we'll be selling memberships. So,
right. That was pretty much my first of the final five questions, is where I can find you and everything like that. But I did want to tie this back into it just real quick, because I kind of saw the parallel. You've talked several times about it's not about the money. It's about the community and like helping these people do something that you found a passion and a love for. Is that, in your mind, is that a key to being successful when you start a project like this?
Yeah, because you can go out and read books and read excerpts from people who have made it and feel completely alone and lost in their lives and in their world. Happens a lot to sports stars, actually. People get these big deals. They actually get lost. You see them do drugs and music stars, all that type of stuff. The reason being is they weren't grounded in who they were and what they're trying to do. And I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying, hey, that's what's going on here. And so our goal is very simple. We want to help people. And when you help people on scale, that's when reward heads your way, right? You can go biblical on that one too, right? There's in the Bible, it says the same thing, you know, serve people and the rewards will be brought to you in the way that you need it. And that's been the weird part about our journey. So I'll share something, we're kind of going on a dovetail here, but I'll share something with you. Over the last year and a half, we've been actively out there trying to raise investment capital because we need the money to do this thing. And we've been pushing and pushing. And these investors, they don't camp. They don't get it. They just don't get it. And it's not to their detriment. They don't know it. And so we haven't been able to raise that capital, but yet we still are making it happen. Mm-hmm. And we keep moving it forward. And the point being is we're going to do this and we're going to help you go camping. And guess what? We did it. And point being is, we aren't doing it because we want to make money. We need to make money to survive and pay our bills and all that type of stuff. But we're doing it because we want to help. We want to make it easier to go camping. And because that's our goal, even when people say, no, I'm not interested in investing in you, okay, we keep moving ahead. We keep moving on. And so that's the type of stuff that moves you ahead in life, moves you ahead in business, and actually makes things happen. There's the old analogy of overnight successes. And if you've ever spoken to anybody who's been an overnight success, they will tell you, yeah, right. Overnight, my butt. I spent the last 5 years trying to do this, and it finally all of a sudden clicked. And so, you know, I'd like to eventually say it was an overnight success, but the reality is it's been a lot of hard work, but the hard work has a purpose in the end. And so one of the things I get a lot of pride about, and we get this quite often now, which is cool, is random people who run into our website, check out the technology, and send us a note. And about a week ago, we got a note from somebody who, I'll paraphrase what he said, because it summed up what we thought, and to have a third party, somebody completely unconnected, recognize that, it was cool. He basically said, what you are working on will fundamentally change the way people find campsites. You have created the holy grail of camping, and it is so far beyond what anybody else is doing or thinking that I commend you on the sheer genius of this endeavor. Holy smokes. Like that was amazing. Just like, I could just take the rest of the day off. I was like, this was just, and honestly, it's still in my inbox. I check it out every morning, not because I need the ego boost, but because when you get that type of validation, when you've been swimming in the dark forever, and all of a sudden you start seeing that light on the lighthouse, and now you know where you're going. That's that message. So check it out. Let us know if you think we're nuts. If you like it, I don't need the validation, but we appreciate the validation.
Yeah. And it feels good to know that what you're doing is helping others. You could quote it differently from like 100 different people, but I think of Jay Shetty. I listened to his podcast, read his book. I think it's called Think Like a Monk. And one of the things he talks about is lose yourself in service. Whenever you feel lost, whenever you feel like you need to find direction, serve in some capacity. And a lot of the times you find your feet back on the path to your purpose. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
That is.
Well, let's move into our final five questions here, Mark. You've been awesome. I mean, this is so much good content here. We pretty much answered question number one already, which is where we can find you guys on social media, how do we get involved, and all those things. So I'll tag those in the show notes. And then for that reason, I'll skip on to number two. And I've been dying to ask you this because it's a fun question, and outdoorsy people, it's typical all over the place. You've mentioned mountain biking. This might be the answer. What is your favorite outdoor activity and why?
Yeah, it's mountain biking. That's an easy one. Mountain biking is specifically, we have the tandem mountain bike still. And I now have an 8-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. So my 8-year-old has his own mountain bike now. And we go out riding, and we tow the 1.5-year-old in a trailer behind on the tandem. And so, it's an opportunity for us to exercise together. I don't know the age of your listeners, if they're young, if they have families or not, but if you're young and you don't have a family, enjoy this time that you have to go out and do whatever the hell you want, whenever you want. Once you start a family, that is gone. Like you're never doing that again. You now have a family, and I'm not knocking. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it is what it is. And so being able to go outdoors with the kids and go for rides with them is really what we enjoy. So yeah, being outside, just it's what rejuvenates us. We're always drawn to the mountains. I don't know. I couldn't live in the plains. I need to be near mountains. And so that's our escape.
Nice. And I've never been, as a kid, my dad almost killed me a couple of times because I almost killed myself on a bike, like just bombing things. I always thought it was super fun. But as an adult, I've never really gotten into like the downhill. And it's something I want to do in the future just because it does look so much fun. And the technology and the bikes is amazing, the way that that's caught up. But what specifically for you, especially when you're most competitive, what was it about mountain biking that hooked you?
Yeah, it wasn't even so a few parts to that question. Number one, you have to work really, really hard to get to the top of the mountain. You have to push yourself to climb up. And, I mentioned I grew up in Simi Valley, and if nobody's been there before, there is a series of trails over on Rocky Peak. That's what I grew up on. I grew up on those trails, and there was a trail, Chumash Trail, Rocky Peak Fire Road, and Hummingbird Trail. Hummingbird Trail specifically was designed as a downhill course. It was very rocky, narrow downhill. I actually went up it. That was my ride every day. I went up the downhill course, up Rocky Peak, and then down Chumash Trail. Nobody went up it. Like, I went up it. That was my ride up. And for me, when I'm riding and you're pushing yourself hard, and it's something a lot of cyclists and a lot of endurance folks will know, is your biggest enemy to yourself is yourself, your mind telling you to stop, to back off. And so one of the things that cycling does is it really focuses your will and your goal, because you're battling yourself, you're battling the road, you're battling the hill, whatever it is you're challenging, you're battling those things and you need to overcome them. And so you need to, it kind of, I guess, in a way, now that I'm saying that, I realize that it probably formulated who I am and what I do, right? Because
right.
I grew up riding and it's the goal. So I guess that's the thing about riding, is it forces you to challenge your inner self and not really overcome. You may hear people say overcome, but it's work within that. And also understanding that whatever preconceived limits you have in your own mind of what you can do, you can do a lot more. You can really push yourself. I did for a while there, when I was in my early 20s, I was doing 24-hour mountain bike races solo. Wow. So that's where you hop on a bike and you race for 24 hours straight. It's nuts, like just bonkers nuts. And there were some people that were way faster than me because I don't know what the heck they were on. Like, it was nuts. But you still, I would do like 14 or 15 laps of about a 10 to 12 mile mountain bike course in the course of 24 hours. It was
non-stop.
Bonkers. And nonstop. Yeah, you can take breaks if you want, but it's a race, so you keep going. Yeah. And I was racing in Whistler, British Columbia, and I vividly remember this. It was 4 a.m. or a little bit right around 4 a.m., 5 a.m. So once dusk comes, you have to have your lights on. So you're racing all night with lights on. You can't see anything. If you've ever been mountain biking at night, it's just wherever your light is shining, that's what you see, right? You don't see anything else. And I was getting tired. I was getting demoralized. It's a really big mental game on 24-hour races. And I came into this prairie, and I didn't know it was a prairie. And the sun started rising, and the sky turned like this bright baby blue with the clouds lighting up. And I just vividly remembering that was why I ride. Not because of the race, not because of anything else. It's simply to reconnect and see nature and the natural world around you. And that you feel a little bit of that holy presence too when you're doing that, right? You mm-hmm. feel that this is bigger than me. This isn't, you know. And that was the thing about racing, is I got to the point where I was becoming so philosophical on it. I didn't give a care about the race. I was just out to ride and have a good time. Like, who cared about racing? If you win, you know, everybody says yay, but they don't care the next day. So, you know, it's just that's what I get out of riding. I don't know if that answered the question or not, but that was
phenomenal answer. Yes, great answer. Thank you for sharing that. Question number three, and you've been to a lot of places outdoors, so this could be a tricky one. What is the favorite place that you have that you've ever been outdoors?
So we used to have one easy one. It used to be Springdale, Utah, right at the bottom of Zion National Park there. That was like our spot. And that was early on when we first started traveling. Our problem is now that we've been traveling for 12 years, we do not have a favorite spot. But maybe because, you know, I mentioned we're in the process of buying a house right now.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that the area that we chose, you can maybe insinuate that, hey, he likes that spot best. The Black Hills of South Dakota. The Black Hills of South Dakota. It's a pretty amazing spot, that whole region. So, but there's so many great places. And, you know, wherever your listeners are, they need to recognize that even if they don't like it, it's probably a pretty amazing place certain times of the year or certain days. And so recognizing the beauty and the surroundings that are around you is very important to life. But if your listeners are in an area where like, nah, there's nothing here that I like, I don't want to be here, let me give you a little piece of advice. Life is way too short to be living somewhere that you hate. Move. Find a better spot. Now. Go. You need to be somewhere. Your life is way too short to be miserable somewhere. So find happiness. And if you move to a place you think is awesome and you're miserable there, it's not the place. Yep. It's you. Fix it.
Yes. Great answer. Question number four, what is something that you see today as a blessing that when it originally happened, you might've saw it as a mistake?
Oh, there's so many. So there are so many The answer to that is that there are so many incidences, but what I can share about it, maybe it summarizes it best for your listeners, is one of the things we learned through our travels is the biggest mistake you can make is trying to force something to happen when the world is preventing you from doing it. And what else? I'll share a story about this, and it's like a positive story in a way. So our son was born. Mm-hmm. And we were in that fifth wheel that was 38 feet long, right? And it didn't have a bedroom for him. So I was like, man, I got to find another RV that we can build a bedroom in. So I'm looking for a toy hauler. And I'm not finding one I like. The prices are off, whatever. And I happened to be on Craigslist, and I found this really bad ad for a fifth wheel, 44 feet long, two bedrooms. Like, yeah, right. There's nothing like that out there. So we go and look at it. It ends up being the right RV. Problem is they have other offers on it. So we want it. So I say, all right, we'll buy this RV. Problem is we have our other RV, right? So now we have two RVs. They said, great. But then they said, you know what? We're really not in a hurry. We want to stay in it for a month until we can get our house closed. Are you okay with waiting for the closing? And we're like, you know, like, yes, thank God. Yeah, sure. Yeah, go for it. Yeah, we're okay with that. So then we're driving back home from that. And we're figuring, you know, what are we going to do? We have to sell our fifth wheel real fast. How is this going to work out? And a few days go by and my phone rings. Now I'll back up. About 2 months earlier, I'd listed our fifth wheel on eBay. No offers, nothing. This guy calls me. This is a few days after we bought this other rig. Mm-hmm. Hey, I forget his name. It was like John and Patty from Wisconsin. And is your fifth wheel still available? I said, yeah, it is. He's like, I want to buy it. I'm like, well, do you want to look at it? He's like, no, it looks perfect. I'll just have somebody verify that it is what it is, but we'll buy it. But here's the catch. I don't want to pick it up for another month. Is that okay with you? I said, sure, that's okay with me. And so we ended up doing this transition. And the point being is that we originally were trying to force it, make it happening, and you're just getting roadblock after roadblock. Maybe take a step back and look at that situation. And maybe, just maybe, there's a reason why you shouldn't have that. Be good with that decision and move on with the stuff that's making it happen. And maybe somehow you're going to get back to where you thought you wanted to be, but in a circle to get back there.
So incredible. Awesome. Mark, before I get to question number five, I just want to take a second and I want to acknowledge you and your team for revolutionizing how people are going to be able to get out and find a great place to set up a tent or a camper. Like we talked about earlier, there's so many, you know, fond family memories and friendships and even moments of solitude that I only owe to camping. And, you know, I'm looking forward to this 2021 being the year of camping. That's going to be my mantra, I think, moving forward. So thank you for that as well. But yeah, keep up the good work, keep doing what you're doing. And it's an amazing project. So I'm really excited to continue to follow along and continue to spread the good word of what you're up to.
Appreciate that.
Absolutely, man. All right. Final question. Question number five. When it is all said and done, when you're dead and gone, like you said, life is short. It's got to end at some point. But you got a bunch of your loved ones sitting around a campfire and they're talking about your legacy. What do you hope that they're saying about you?
He lived. That's it. Yeah. That's it. He lived. Because when you're gone, again, you don't take anything with you. So the only thing you can do now is live. And if you're living, you have the people around you. So your immediate surroundings, your family, your friends that are immediate, be good to them, treat them well. Then you got the strangers that you meet every day, be good to them, treat them well. And then just live. Life's too damn short. Stop screwing around, stop all the drama, just live. And I hope that's what they say about me is that I lived.
That'd be a fantastic legacy, Mark. Awesome. Great answer. Thank you so much for your time tonight. I can't wait to share these bits of wisdom with the world and continue to spread the good word of what you're up to.
I appreciate it. Great, great conversation. I hope we get to do this again.
And that is that for this episode of Camping Out. Now is your time to go check out campsiteviews.com. If you're someone who enjoys camping, this is a no-brainer. Go sign up, become a member, and you'll never be stuck guessing about what your campsite's going to look like before you show up ever again. I really hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with Mark. I know I enjoyed recording it. I found him very engaging and extremely interesting and a good storyteller, so I hope you thought the same thing. If you did enjoy this episode, go ahead and share it with your loved ones. And if you haven't already, go ahead and sneak on over to the Apple Podcast app and leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you love about the podcast. If you do love the podcast, now is your time to head over to dancamp.net/shop
to get your Camping Out merchandise. Stickers are buy one, get one right now. They're 50% off. We've got a couple new hats and t-shirts that are going to be making an appearance in the shop soon. So get out there and rep your favorite outdoor podcast. Thank you so much, campers, for hanging out with us another week. And remember, adventure comes to those who go.